Good afternoon. NATO heads and heads of state and government will meet in Washington next week at a pivotal moment for our alliance. Our summit will be an opportunity to celebrate 75 years of the most successful alliance in history. But more than celebrate, we will take decisive decisions. We will increase our support to Ukraine for the long haul, reinforce our collective defence and deepen our global partnerships. Our most urgent task at the summit will be support to Ukraine. Ukraine must prevail and they need our sustained support. So at the summit next week, I expect heads of state and government will agree a substantial package for Ukraine. First, NATO security assistance and training for Ukraine. NATO will take over the coordination and provision of most international security assistance. With a command led by a three-star general and around 700 personnel working at a NATO headquarters in Germany and at logistical nodes in the eastern part of the alliance. This will not make NATO party to the conflict, but it will enhance Ukraine's self-defense. Second, a financial pledge. I expect allies to affirm their determination to support Ukraine in building a force capable of defeating Russian aggression today and deterring it in the future. Since Russia's full-scale invasion, allies have provided around 40 billion euros in military aid each year. Allies agree that this is a minimum baseline, and I expect allies will decide at the summit to sustain this level within the next year. I also expect that allies will agree to share the burden fairly, taking into account the size of their GDP, and provide sustained level of funding for Ukraine to prevail. We will review this level of support at our summit in 2025, not least to ensure that our support is in the line with Ukraine's needs. Third, more immediate military support to Ukraine. I expect allies will provide further air defence systems and ammunition, as well as other capabilities. Fourth, more bilateral security agreements with Ukraine. Many have been signed already, and I expect more by the time of the summit. Fifth, deepened military interoperability. We will agree to work more closely with the Ukrainian armed forces, including at the new NATO-Ukraine Joint Analysis Training and Education Centre in Poland. We will also work together to build Ukraine's defence industry and deepen our cooperation on innovation. All the work we are doing together is making Ukraine stronger, more interoperable and better prepared than ever to join our alliance. I discussed this with President Zelensky here at NATO just a few days ago. We agree that all these elements, a NATO command, more funding, more military support, more security agreements, and more interoperability, constitute a bridge to NATO membership and a very strong package for Ukraine at the summit. So Ukraine is moving closer to NATO. Deterrence and defence will be another important topic for our summit. Since Russia's aggression against Ukraine began in 2014, NATO has fundamentally transformed. Today, we have 500,000 troops on high readiness, combat-ready battle groups in the eastern part of the alliance for the first time, more high-end capabilities, including fifth-generation aircraft, and two highly committed new members with Finland and Sweden. At the summit, we will take further steps. Allies are set to endorse a pledge that will strengthen transatlantic defence industrial cooperation to boost production. We will also further enhance our ballistic missile defences with a new Aegis Ashore base in Poland. Our strengthened defences have been made possible because allies are spending more. 23 allies, a record number, now invest at least 2% of GDP in defence. Defence spending across European allies and Canada is up 18% this year alone, the biggest increase in decades. Allies are taking burden sharing seriously. The third topic for the summit is our global partnerships. As we see in Ukraine, our security is not regional, it is global. Iran and North Korea are fueling Russia's war with drones and shells. China is propping up Russia's war economy and providing microelectronics and other dual-use goods for Russia's war. The closer that authoritarian actors align, the more important it is that we work closely with our friends in the Indo-Pacific. So I have invited leaders of Australia, Japan, New Zealand and the Republic of Korea to the summit. We will build on our practical cooperation with flagship projects on Ukraine, cyber and new technologies. We will also address how to work more closely on defence industrial production. Standing up to authoritarian actors with our partners help to uphold the rules-based international order. NATO was founded in Washington 75 years ago on a single solemn promise. An attack on one ally is an attack on all. From that foundation, we have built the most powerful and successful alliance in history. NATO delivers for our shared security, and in return, the alliance enjoys strong support. New polling released by the Pew Research Center this week shows that some two-thirds of citizens see NATO positively. This aligns with our own new polling conducted across all 32 allies. An overwhelming majority of our citizens, 70%, would vote to remain in NATO. Only 14% would vote to leave. And large majorities want their country to continue supporting Ukraine. The decisions we will take in Washington next week will ensure that we continue to protect our people and our values. And with that, I'm ready to take your questions.
Thank you. I'll start on the right there with Binna from Yonhap.
Thank you, Binna from Yonhap News Agency. The President of South Korea today finally confirmed that he will attend the summit next week, and he said that he would seek ways to enhance the cooperation against the North Korean-Russian relationship, and I was wondering your comment on this. And secondly, you just mentioned that you would discuss flagship projects on Ukraine with the Indo-Pacific partners. Can you give us a little hint? What would this be? Thank you.
So first of all, the Republic of Korea is a highly valued partner. I visited the Republic of Korea several times as Secretary General of NATO, and the President has also been here at NATO summits and meetings. And the NATO summit next week will be the third consecutive NATO summit where South Korea is attending and the President is attending, and I think that reflects how we have deepened and strengthened our partnership. I think that what we have seen in Ukraine demonstrates how interlinked our security is. North Korea is providing significant military support to Russia's war of aggression against Ukraine. At the same time, we see how North Korea are investing in nuclear and missile capabilities. We are deeply concerned that in return for the support that North Korea is providing to Russia, Russia is helping North Korea with their missile and nuclear programs. So it just demonstrates the interlink between our security and the security of South Korea and the countries in the Asia Pacific. And that makes the partnership so important. The flagship projects are about several things. It's partly about medical rehabilitation of Ukrainian soldiers. It's how we can work more closely on issues also related to, for instance, technology. And these are concrete projects where we can do more together. We're also looking into how we can expand the exchange of intelligence information with South Korea. So there are different areas where we are working together, partly in the flagship project concept and partly on the more bilateral basis, NATO and South Korea. Of course, NATO allies are also strongly condemning North Korea's violations of multiple UN Security Council resolutions and the nuclear and missile programs that North Korea are pursuing, partly because this is a threat to the neighbors, but also it's a challenge to global security, and again, it undermines or underlines the close connection between Asia-Pacific and NATO.
Thank you. I'll go next to Alf from VG. Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Secretary General, you met President Biden recently in Washington. So I would like to ask you about your impression of his current health condition and if you want to comment on the calls for his retirement. And I would also take the opportunity to ask you to comment the overnight election result in the UK and if we could expect some changes, policy changes from London before the summit next week. Thank you.
I worked with President Biden for several years. I strongly appreciate his strong personal commitment to NATO. I also welcome his leadership and the leadership of the U.S. administration in providing support to Ukraine. And of course, for decades under different U.S. administrations, the United States has been by far the biggest ally and a cornerstone of the North Atlantic Alliance. And to work with President Biden on all these issues has been and is a privilege. And I appreciate his strong personal commitment to all these tasks. On the UK elections, I will congratulate Keir Starmer on his election victory. I look forward to welcoming him and to meet him at the NATO summit in Washington next week. I have met also Keir Starmer here at the NATO headquarters, and I know that he's a strong supporter of NATO, of the transatlantic alliance, and also committed to ensure that the United Kingdom continues to be a strong and very committed NATO ally. The United Kingdom is one of the founding members. It was actually the United Kingdom, the present government back in 1949 in London, that was a driving force for the establishment of NATO. And I'm absolutely confident that, and I therefore welcome also the strong commitment of Keir Starmer to continue that path. Let me also say that I have a lot to thank Rishi Sunak for our cooperation. It has been great to work with him. And it's good to know that the United Kingdom, with shifting different political parties in government, the United Kingdom remains a strong and staunch and leading NATO ally.
Okay, thank you. I'll go to Andrew and then Terry.
Secretary General, what does Prime Minister Viktor Orban's visit to Moscow say about the state of unity within NATO on the eve of the Washington summit? And do you agree with European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen's assessment that it represents appeasement?
Prime Minister Viktor Orban has been in Moscow before. Then he has informed us about his visits. He has also, we also discussed his visits after he has returned. Hungary informed us about this upcoming visit. And I expect that when Viktor Orban is in Washington at the NATO summit next week, there will be opportunities to discuss and address the discussions he had in Moscow. This is something which takes place on a regular basis between allies. I visited Hungary just a couple of weeks ago. I met with Prime Minister Viktor Orban. We, of course, discussed the war in Ukraine, Russia's war of aggression. And all allies, also Hungary, agrees that Russia is responsible for the war, Russia is the perpetrator, and Russia can end this war today by stop attacking Ukraine. Of course, Viktor Orbán is not representing NATO at these meetings. He's representing his own country. And Prime Minister Orbán, also when I met him a couple of weeks ago, we also discussed his upcoming visit to Kiev. So you may know that he also visited Kiev recently. What is important is that all allies, also Hungary, agrees that that Russia is the aggressor and Russia is responsible for the war, and that Ukraine's territorial integrity and sovereignty must be respected. I would also like to say that during my visit to Budapest a couple of weeks ago, we of course discussed the war of aggression against Ukraine, but we also discussed NATO support, and we were able to find a way, an agreement that enables NATO allies to step up their support, to do more, to institutionalize and strengthen our support to Ukraine without Hungary blocking that. So we will, of course, continue to consult among NATO allies, and I welcome the fact that we have found a way to avoid any blockages from Budapest to more support from NATO to Ukraine.
Terry, I'll give you the floor. Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Secretary General, in fact, Viktor Orbán does not regularly state that Russia is the aggressor. He, in fact, says that the war is being propagated now by continuing to aid Ukraine, and that is one of the reasons you had to make this deal with him, that Hungary is not in favor of aiding Ukraine. So what kind of message does this send? And was Viktor Orbán one of the reasons why you could not get a multi-year commitment on your hoped-for package for Ukraine? But the main point is Viktor Orbán does not seem to share your message.
Well, Hungary has subscribed to and agreed many strong statements from all NATO allies condemning the invasion of Ukraine by Russia and reiterating our support to Ukraine's territorial integrity. And I expect that, I'm confident that when we meet in Washington at the NATO summit, we will again have all allies with very strong language on the war, condemning the invasion and supporting Ukraine's territorial integrity, and condemning the invasion of Ukraine. Then you're right that on how to provide support, there are some differences. And Hungary has clearly stated that they don't want to support NATO efforts in providing more military assistance. They don't want to support a financial pledge, and that was one of the reasons I went to Budapest a couple of weeks ago. The good news is that we find a way to accommodate and to deal with that, meaning that Ukraine will not be part of the new NATO command in Wiesbaden. They will not be part of the NATO security assistance and training for Ukraine. And Ukrainian money will not be spent on military support to Ukraine. But the good news is that Hungary then made it absolutely clear that they will not block NATO efforts. And therefore, we will agree a NATO security assistance and training command for Ukraine. We will agree an ambitious and strong long-term financial pledge for Ukraine. Of course, Hungary will continue to live up to all its NATO obligations and also to pay their share of NATO's common funded budget. So I think actually we find a good way to, first of all agree that that Russia is responsible for the war, Russia is the perpetrator, Russia has violated Ukraine's territorial integrity and sovereignty, and all allies, also Ukraine, is clear on that. But when it comes to military support, yes, there is a difference, but we have found a way to deal with that by ensuring that Hungary is not blocking the increased efforts by NATO allies.
Okay, Obviously, the Secretary General was referring to Hungarian money there. That was just to...
Okay.
Over to Fats. Yeah, Thomas.
Thanks a lot. Thomas Gutschka, Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung. Secretary General, a question on the financial pledge to Ukraine. It's more of a clarification question. You speak about a baseline of 40 billion euros for the next year. So the next year, what does that mean really? Does it refer to 2025, all of 2025? Or does it refer to the next year starting right after the summit, leading up to the next summit in The Hague in 2026? Thank you.
Well, it's always easier to discuss text and the concrete meaning when you all have the text. And the problem is that you will not have the text until next week. But I see a lot of comments out there in the media. So the challenge is that we can sit down and go through line by line when all the lines are agreed and all the lines are adopted and the heads of state and government put forward what they have agreed. So what I can say today is that I expect allies will agree that we must sustain our support, our economic, also military support to Ukraine, in a way that ensures that Ukraine prevails, that they're able to defend against the Russian aggression today and deter in the future. I also expect that we will refer to the 40 billion, which is the yearly amount allies have provided so far to Ukraine, as a minimum baseline. And then I also expect them to agree that we need to ensure that we sustain our support to ensure that Ukraine prevails and that we will annually review our commitment, not least to ensure that Ukraine has the forces they need to defeat the Russian invaders. This is a strong commitment. This is a commitment that provides more predictability, and it's a much better place to be in than where we have been so far, where all our support to Ukraine has been dependent on much more ad hoc, short-term announcements, where there is often a problem with transparency and accountability. There have been made announcements, and then we have not seen that being delivered. So one of the reasons why having a NATO financial pledge is also to assure a much higher level of predictability and accountability, and also by agreeing that we'll have fair burden sharing, we will also use GDP, that will also make it more accountable and more sustainable, the support for Ukraine. One more thing, which is perhaps a bit technical, and that is that this is the military support. And of course, the 40 billion is an annual number. It's important not to compare that with all other types of support. Many of those numbers are over many years. And then, of course, you cannot compare something where you summarize something over many years with something which is a yearly amount. Second, some of the support which is given, for instance, for macroeconomic support, that's loans over many years, not comparable with annual support. And therefore, also one advantage with the pledge that I expect allies to agree next week is that we'll also have defined criteria of what to count and how to count. So more accountability will ensure more sustainability and more predictability. So this is part about the exact numbers, but it's also very much about the methodology to ensure that we have NATO as a tool to ensure that allies deliver in a fair way. And that will be the combination of the pledge with the NATO command. People working actually with the delivery of this military assistance and training. That will create a much more institutionalized, stronger framework around the support. And that's extremely important for Ukraine. And I'm sure that will minimize the risk for that we will see again what we saw this winter and spring. Big gaps, big delays in support. because then NATO will have a role in ensuring that allies are delivering on what they have promised. We will agree the criteria, we will agree burden sharing, we agree at the level of ambition, we agree that we will intend to deliver what Ukraine needs to deter and defend.
Okay, we'll go to NTB, please.
Thank you for the floor. Bibiana Piene from Norwegian News Agency. Mr. General Secretary, I just have a nice open question for you. What do you think will be the most difficult discussions at the summit, and also in regard to the pledge for Ukraine, the financial pledge? I've seen analysts saying that what's given today is not enough, and that NATO has to change its strategy from as long as it takes to as much as it takes. What's your opinion on that? Thank you.
Well, again, so you will see the pledge next week. But again, I expect that we will agree as NATO, and that's for the first time we have a NATO document agreed at the heads of state and government level, that we agree that we will provide Ukraine with the support they need to make them capable of defeating Russian aggression and deterring aggression in the future. So that sets the level of ambition, clearly in a statement by heads of state and government. Second, I expect there will be a reference to the 40 billion, which is the annual support, defined based on NATO criteria. I understand you can count in different ways, but that is based on the NATO-defined criteria, so what we count and how we count. That we then have a reference to the 40 billion. And that we say, refer to that as a minimum baseline. Meaning, of course, that if there is a need to provide more support, we have to provide more support because we commit to deliver the support they need to defeat Russian aggression. But also to be enables to have some kind of accountability and burden sharing, we need to have a kind of baseline to do those calculations, to base those calculations on. And then I also expect that we will extend this support and that we will have annual reviews, not least to ensure that we are delivering enough support. So it depends a bit what you compare with. Of course, all allies have problems with financial commitments that goes beyond their budgetary procedures. But this is a much stronger, much more predictable, much more capable commitment than we had before, because actually before we didn't have any NATO commitment on behalf of all 32 allies. This is the first time we will have that, defining a level of ambition. I expected the summit to be a very good summit. Of course, we will celebrate the 75th anniversary. We will address important issues, Ukraine, deterrence and defense, and our Asia-Pacific partners, and all those areas. We are now very close to having agreement among all allies.
Great, thank you. I'll go to Bloomberg. Go ahead.
Thanks so much for the question. Secretary General, I mean, amid the political upheaval that we're seeing in many countries right now, are you convinced that what is agreed by the leaders in Washington next week will not be rowed back by any future governments? And what message would you have for any future governments that would potentially consider walking away from those promises?
We live in a more uncertain times, and we live in more unpredictable times. And NATO is a pillar of stability and certainty in more dangerous times. And it's extremely important that we ensure that NATO remains so. Of course, in democracies, you can never give guarantees. We are 32 sovereign, independent, democratic nations. But there have been so many crossroads where people have been concerned about new governments, new political forces undermining NATO. What we have seen again and again is that NATO has prevailed as a very strong alliance. So I expect that to be also the case in the future, because it is in the national security interest of all 32 allies to stand together. So the paradox is in a way that the more dangerous, the more unpredictable the world is, the more important it is that we stick together in NATO. Again, I cannot guarantee. NATO has never been a given. NATO will never be a given. But NATO has proven extremely resilient, because when you have new governments, when you have new political leaderships in charge, then they see the reality. They see that strong NATO is good for them, and especially now. So therefore, I'm an optimist, and I expect that regardless of the shifting political winds we see across the alliance, and we have seen before, NATO will remain a stable and strong force in an uncertain time.
Okay, we'll go to Dmytro.
Thank you, Dmytro Shkruko, National News Agency of Ukraine. And before the summit, we see like growing attempts to push Ukraine to some kind of negotiations for giving up its territory instead of some kind of ceasefire or peace talks. And among those sides are also some NATO members. Do you expect that issue will be discussed among leaders on the summit? And short follow-up, if I may. The same forces demand Ukraine to abandon its intention to join NATO in a precondition for any kind of ceasefire on the front line. So Ukraine is fighting for its freedom to choose European Atlantic integration. Is NATO leaders decisive enough to stand under the pressure? Thank you.
Well, NATO leaders are decisive and strong, and that will be strongly expressed at the NATO summit, where I expect a strong package for Ukraine. With the new NATO train and assistance for Ukraine, with the NATO command for Ukraine, with the financial pledge, with additional announcements of more military support, with the bilateral security agreements, and with everything we do to deepen the cooperation between our military and Ukrainian militaries on interoperability, the new training and evaluation center in Poland, and all the other efforts. So that will be a strong demonstration of our commitment to Ukraine. Second, it is for Ukraine to decide what are acceptable conditions for peace talks and any negotiated solution, because Ukraine is a sovereign, independent nation. What we shall do as NATO allies is to help Ukraine to strengthen their hand, because we know that there is a very strong link between what happens around the negotiating table and the situation on the battlefield. So if we want a negotiated solution, then we need to provide military support to Ukraine, and that's exactly what NATO allies are doing. I expect new announcements of air defense. I expect new announcement of military support, and I expect the NATO command and the NATO financial pledge to be agreed. And that will be much stronger than we had before the summit. There are no signs that Putin is really President Putin is ready to negotiate for peace, because we saw his latest proposal, and that was that Ukraine should give up all the territory in the four provinces he has annexed illegally, meaning that they should not only give up territory that Russia controls today, but actually give up a lot of territory that Ukraine controls today. And second, he also said that not only should Ukraine give up much more territory than Russia occupies today, but Ukraine should also promise that they should give up the right every nation has to choose some path, to not be a member of NATO. And of course, we have seen a pattern of Russian aggressive behavior against Ukraine. This war didn't start in 2022. It started in 2014. When they illegally first annexed Crimea, then some months later went into eastern Donbass, agreed a ceasefire, Minsk won, violated that, moved the front line even further west, agreed Minsk II, waited for 7 years, and then launched a full-scale attack and took even more. We cannot have Minsk III. What we need now is something that actually is credible, something that where actually the war stops and Russia stops its aggression. And therefore, when the fighting ends, we need security. We need to enable the Ukrainians to deter, but we also need some kind of security guarantees for Ukraine. And of course, that's also one of the reasons why allies so clearly have stated that Ukraine will become a member of NATO.
Okay, we'll take two more questions. Wall Street Journal and then AFP.
Thank you, Secretary General. Part of the reason for holding the summit in Washington now, 1 week before the Republican convention and not back in April when it was NATO's birthday, was to get the message across to American voters that Europe is stepping up and things have changed and Europe is playing a big part. But given America's intense focus right now on President Biden's capability or his frailty, can you get your message across to Americans? And are you worried that President Biden himself has become the focus or will become the focus of the summit? Thank you.
NATO summits will always take place in a domestic context, wherever you have it, and at whatever time. There will always be a political context around that summit. And also not only in the host nation, but in all the other nations. There are big elections going on in Europe in the lead-up to the summit. That's part of the reality in democracies. What I can do and NATO can do is that we can focus on the substance of NATO. And that's exactly what we will do. And I'm absolutely confident that we will have a lot of substance. Important decisions will be taken in Washington next week. On the turns and the fence, not the least, the fact that now 23 allies are spending 2% or more of GDP on defense. That's a total different place now where we are compared to where we were just a few years ago. And for the United States, burden sharing has been perhaps the key issue when NATO has been addressed. And European allies and Canada have really delivered. 10 years ago, we agreed to deliver 2% of GDP on defense. If you put together European allies and Canada, they're actually now spending 2% of GDP altogether of GDP on defense. So we have delivered on the pledge we made back in 2014. Then we agreed last year that 2% was a minimum. So, of course, we have more to do. And I expect that at Washington we'll then also strengthen the message about defense spending or make sure that allies are delivering. Ukraine, big substantial package, and Asia-Pacific. I think for the United States, the fact that NATO are working more closely with Australia, New Zealand, Japan, and South Korea demonstrates that NATO is important for the United States also in addressing the threats and the challenges they face in the Indo-Pacific and also address the challenges from China that makes NATO more relevant also even more relevant in the U.S. context. So there will be domestic issues always. That's not for NATO to be part of. What NATO can do is that we can demonstrate that we are an agile, adaptable, strong alliance. And we'll do that by making important decisions on the terms and defense, burden sharing within the alliance, Ukraine, and working with our Asia-Pacific partners, not least to address the challenges from China.
Thanks a lot, Secretary General. Max Delaney, AFP. You very pointedly sidestepped the direct questions about concerns over President Biden's condition. So I'm going to give you another chance to reassure nervous allies and citizens across the alliance. Do you truly believe that President Biden is mentally and physically fit enough to lead the biggest nuclear-armed ally for now and for the next 4.5 years? And in your dealing with him recently, have you noticed any decline in his condition? Thank you.
Also, I worked with President Biden for several years, also before he became president. That has been very good cooperation. I met him just a couple of weeks ago. We had good meetings in the Oval Office. We made progress in the preparations for the upcoming NATO summit on Ukraine, on deterrence and defense, and many other issues. And I welcome his strong personal leadership on the support for Ukraine, on the support for NATO, and he knows NATO very well because he has worked with these issues for many years. Then one of the reasons why NATO is a successful alliance is that we have always stayed out of domestic political issues. And if I start to say anything that makes it possible to connect me to ongoing political debates in any allied country, then I will actually just weaken the alliance. So I have had and continue to have a very good working relationship with President Biden, and we have, and I welcome his very strong personal commitment to the alliance and the leadership on Ukraine and many other issues.
Thank you all for your questions. Thank you, Secretary General.
Thank you.